This is the MoneyWeb Be a Better Investor podcast, picking the brains of professional investors on their investment strategies, successes, and mistakes. Your host, Rake Fanica.
Good day and welcome to the Be a Better Investor podcast. It is one of South Africa's longest running investment podcasts, and it's now also available on MoneyWeb TV as a video. So please like and subscribe the channel right now. My name is Rake van Niekerk, and in this show, I speak to leading investment professionals about where they come from, how they ended up managing people's savings, and how do they do it. My guest today is Malungelo Zilimbola. He's the founder and CEO of Mazi Asset Management, and this firm celebrates its 20th birthday in October this year. Malungelo, welcome, and thank you for your time. Before we dive into investments and Mazi, by the way, congratulations on the 20 years. That's no mean feat. Tell us a bit about yourself. Where do you come from, and what career did you dream of when you were still at school?
That's a very good question, and thank you for that, and thank you for the opportunity. And to the MoneyWeb listeners, you know, thank you for your time. So I was born in Northwest Province. I was born in Klerksdorp. As you know, in the 70s, there was quite a lot of riots. And when it was time for me to go to school, parents moved to a quieter and rural Northwest. That is where I started school, where, you know, there were no riots at the time. It was all Putatsona. And obviously, I've got a Xhosa background. Both my parents are Xhosa. And I was thrown in the deep end as a youngster into the foreign environment, which was a Tsona-speaking environment. And, you know, I had to kind of learn the language. And I think for me, that was one big social shock that I had early in my life. And I felt like I was a foreigner in this place. But, you know, guess what? You know, I thrived, you know, I mastered the language, and I even beat the Tswana people in their own language, you know, and through school, I excelled, and I always wanted to be in business. I think from being a youngster, I've always wanted to be in business.
You started your studies to become a quantity surveyor, which is a very, very niche and interesting career and occupation. But obviously, somewhere you were influenced by the investment world. How did you go from studying towards a quantity surveyor to becoming an investment specialist and professional investor?
Yeah, as a youngster, as I've said, you know, I did very well in technical subjects, mathematics and science. And when I went to university, I wanted a course that incorporated both the science part, the technical side, and also the commercial side, you know. And I think when I looked in the engineering space generally, which is a space I was attracted to, I discovered this course, which has, you know, a big commercial side to it, even though it was a technical degree. And if you think about quantity surveying, it is the finance director of the construction industry. You know, in the olden days, they used to call us brick counters. So the accountants are called bean counters, and we are called brick counters. So I wanted to be both in the technical and the commercial space. And that's how I chose, you know, quantity survey. And in the course of doing, you know, that degree, I came across a lot of commercial subjects. You know, I did statistics, I did economics, you know, and I think that's when I realized that, you know, this is where I was like drifting towards. I liked those subjects quite a lot. They were more practical. You could apply economics on a day-to-day, you know, life. And that's when I started looking at something to the commerce side of things as opposed to the more technical things, like being in a construction site, for example.
Now, you founded Mazi in 2006, and I believe in October you will pop the champagne, you'll get out the dancing girls and celebrate the 20th birthday. Why did you start your own business, own investment firm? You know, the Investec is one of the top companies in the country, so it must have been a leap of faith to do your own thing. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's always been really a dream for me to have my own business. And even when I joined Investec, I knew exactly what I wanted, you know, and I'll tell you the reasons why I joined Investec and later on joining RMB. So Investec has got a very hard culture and it's very commercial. And, you know, if you go to RMB, had a soft culture and the guys were purest investors at RMB. So I was the combination of the two. So I was mentored by great guys. I mean, John Bicot, as an example, was my mentor at Investec at the time. And Charles Booth, who was the chief investment officer at RMB Asset Management, was my mentor. So I learned quite a lot from these guys, you know. And just to give you a sense, you know, John is a deep value investor. Obviously, I've learned a lot from that perspective. And then Charles Booth was trained by Mr. Alan Gray himself, you know, but he was more of a pragmatic investor as opposed to a deep value. So the combination of the two were quite a good combination for me. And when I started Mazi Asset Management, it was to really express my way of investing. You know, you take from John Bicot's deep value perspective, you add the pragmatic side of things from Charles Booth. The process from RMB was valuation-driven management, and I got a bit of a combination. So my issue has always been you can buy a cheap stock, but stocks can be cheap for a reason, and you might be buying a value trap, you know. And then from the Charles side of things, Charles Booth side of things is, you know, what is the catalyst to unlock the value from this cheap stock? So that combination was really what I was after. And you can express that your way of investing when you're inside of a group, because you've got to follow their process. Starting your own business, you know, that's how you express your investment philosophy.
John Bicot, you know, he calls himself a deep value investor. In many ways, he's a contrarian investor. He does the opposite of what the market does, or in most cases he does. And it's a very, very, I don't want to call it a niche type of approach. You know, all fund managers will tell you, listen, buy a share at a good value, or if it's cheap, and then sell it when it's high. Now, it's much easier said than done. And then you need to formulate an investment strategy. That's always, you know, difficult to differentiate yourself from that. So what is your investment strategy and philosophy, and how does that differ from the many hundreds of asset management funds or firms in South Africa?
And by the way, you know, they always say that a stock can remain cheaper than you can remain solvent, you know. So I think if you buy in a deep value environment, you've got to have the stomach to wait. And how long is that piece of string? You know, how long are you going to wait? If you underperform for 3 years, your clients will fire you. But I think some investors have got the luxury of expressing that deep value without necessarily being fired by their clients. And, you know, if you look at who really is the guru of value investing, it's Warren Buffett. But where did Warren Buffett source his investments or his source of funds? He ran a company, a big, you know, insurance company that was giving him a float. And then you take that float and invest it. And he had no pressure to report back to clients on a quarterly basis, nor did he have any pressure to be, or any chance to be fired, because this is the money of his own company that he's investing. And he could take a 10-year view on a stock. But if you replicate that model while you're running third-party money, you know, you cannot survive as a business. So just to close that gap, that kind of argument on the deep value side, you know, coming to my way of investing, I'm quite a pragmatic investor. So for me, I look at valuation. And what are the drivers of valuation? You know, there are three drivers of valuation. For me, is you look at, you know, the dividend yield that you get from a company, that's the cash that you get. We call it a bet in hand. And then you look at the growth of earnings in a company. And then lastly, you look at devaluation or revaluation of the PE. So whether your PE is expanding or contracting. So those are three elements that goes into the way I invest in terms of being a valuation investor. And the combination thereof would tell you that I can buy Naspers. Why? Because Naspers might be paying a low dividend yield because it's a growth company, but it's got a massive growth, you know, and it might, you know, have an expensive PE, but the earnings actually bring that PE down because of the growth. So you can see that I can invest in a company with a very high dividend yield and that is cheap, but we know that the company will actually re-rate or you'll unlock value because it's either producing good earnings or it's paying you a big dividend. And for me,
that is a very, very
deep value investor will not be able to justify, will not be able to justify buying a Naspers or a Capitec.
Now, the momentum theme is not there. It's the absolute deep value. But, you know, that is a very sound long-term strategy. I think very, very few investors would fault you at that. But we live in a Trump world. We live in a very, very explosive world with a lot of speculation, a lot of uncertainty. We have conventional wars. We have more conflict in the Middle East. And in all of this, you need to invest people's savings, their pension money. You play a big part in how comfortably or uncomfortably they will one day retire. So how do you position this strategy or apply it within this, you know, crazy markets we are currently seeing?
Yeah, that's really a great question. And especially with the environment that we are navigating at the moment. If you look at the environment that we're in, so an investor has to be quite flexible because the facts change on a daily basis. So if you're a dogmatic investor and say, you know, let me pick a stock, I hate Sasol because it's got poor fundamentals, you know, it's got this gas cliff, you know, everybody's saying that the gas from Mozambique is running out soon. And therefore, these guys won't have gas, you know, that is a feedstock into the chemical business. And therefore, what's going to happen? And people are saying there's going to be a big supply of oil, you know, with all what Trump has been doing, you know, to disrupt the oil markets. For example, we started with Venezuela and now we're busy with the Middle East. And it's such that when the thing changes, you've got to adjust your portfolio. You know, I'll give you an example. When the war started in Philippines, I felt this year, I knew that the oil price is going to shoot through the roof. And that is a fact. That's a fundamental fact. And what do you do? You know that the oil price is going to benefit Sasol. Even though I know the issues and the challenges at Sasol, I will still buy Sasol because I know that it's going to benefit from a very high oil price. And at the time, when the war started, the oil price moved from $60 a barrel. It went over 100, you know, in a matter of days. So in that fashion, you've made a lot of money out of investing in Sasol. And again, when Trump changes his mind, says, listen, I'm now going to have a ceasefire. I'm signing a peace agreement. You know, similarly, the oil price is going to come down. And in that way, you are able to read the facts and adjust your portfolio as such. And it doesn't mean that you are a trader. It means that you are an investor, but you adjust your views based on the facts.
Are you now changing your portfolios more often? Are you buying and selling more than you did 10 years ago or 20 years ago when you started out?
You adjust the positioning of that stock such that you navigate the environment. And it means that you're going to be fully aware all the time as to what's going on in your environment. You talk about gold last year. I mean, gold shot through 6,000, you know, and then if you didn't have any gold stocks, you're left in the dust. And for me, that, you know, if you look at a gold stock and you say what benefits a gold stock, if it's a gold price and you've got certain volumes that you know, or ounces that a gold company is producing, you just do your mathematics. Say, you know, volume times price is called to certain earnings, you know, and I think that those are fundamentals. People are saying, you know, gold is speculation and all of that stuff, but you can see that the gold is at a certain price And if gold is at a certain price, you know what the earnings are going to be. And back to my philosophy, I look at the earnings. And I know that these companies are going to double their earnings because of the gold price. Similarly, when the gold price falls, it went back to 4,000. What do I do in that fact? I know that the profitability of these companies are going to come down. And you adjust your investment accordingly. So it may be like a short time frame to do that, you know. And you can get some trouble.
Okay, but when did you get on the gold train and when did you get off again? Or did you get off again?
Yes, we got off. I mean, we got off early this year. So we were invested in gold for the last, call it 18 months. And as the gold price was climbing up. And I think what we looked at, you know, is that where the demand of gold was. I mean, there's a lot of central bank buying. And if you look at China used to have massive reserve, foreign reserves in treasuries, in U.S. treasuries. And because of all that was happening, you know, with the trade wars, China wanted to reduce their foreign reserves from the dollar. And they wanted to have something else as an alternative to keep their foreign reserves. And gold was that. So they started buying gold. And of course, you know, retail buying of gold as well increased. And also investors, you know, like these ETFs and stuff, investing in gold. And we knew exactly what was driving the gold price. So as I've said, 18 months ago, we started buying. One of our funds that, you know, was performed quite well last year, did 70% in the 12 months from 1 January 2025 to 31st December 2025. And the big benefit was the gold price. Obviously, coming in on to 2026, we could see that the demand, or the guys have got the positions in place, and the demand of gold was slowing down, and you've seen the gold price start to fall down. And then, obviously, you adjust your gold positions accordingly.
I get many requests from young professionals entering the job market to talk about how they should approach investments. Now, I'm not a professional investor. I'm not even a very good investor. I've tried my hand and I know that I should leave it to the professionals. Many of these young professionals, they've opened up their Easy Equities account, put in their 500 Rand a month or 1,000 Rand a month into that account, and now they want to start investing. So what would your advice be to a 22, 23-year-old who would like to build long-term wealth and hopefully get it there quite quickly and seize the market as the way to do it? What would your advice be to that person?
Yeah, so my advice is, first of all, it's very good as a youngster to start early to invest. And that's encouraged. But for me is that you need to learn how to invest. And for me, the best way that I would advise a youngster, a 22-year-old youngster, is to say, start by investing in unit trust. Unit trust, investing as an individual, as a retail investor, in a unit trust where you can start to learn. There's commentary in terms of how the manager that manages that unit trust is investing. They'll tell you, I bought MTN because of these reasons, and I'm selling MTN because of those reasons. So in that way, you are able to learn before you go it alone. So that would be my advice. And I think having an ETF is another good example where you can buy an ETF. These youngsters are so, you know, fortunate because you can buy even foreign ETFs. You can buy the Dow Jones. You can buy the Nasdaq. So you're not investing in one particular stock. You are actually buying either an index where you are beginning to learn, or you're buying a unit trust. Unit trust is a portfolio. You're buying a portfolio which is well diversified, because the most important thing is diversification in investments. They tell you that the only freelance you'll ever get in investing is diversification.
That strategy, and this is not my opinion, that's what I've been told by the young professionals, is for old people. You know, you go and you invest in a unit trust if you don't know what you're doing. I want to get that stock tip from Malungelo and say, listen, go and buy Vodacom and sell Goldfields. Give us something to really to work with. So how should they approach individual stocks? Is there enough research they can done with publicly available information to actually get an informed opinion about that particular counter?
Yeah, so you know what we try and tell investors is that investing is not a short-term game. I think at the moment there's a big problem of gambling where investors or people are taking bets. It's unfortunate that we use the words bets even when we buy stocks. So the guys are betting. So for me, I think we need to inculcate in investors that investing is a long-term game. You're not going to get a quick stock tip. You go and invest and you double your money, or you get 30% or 20%. So that's where we need to start. And if we approach investing with that mindset, you're bound to make a lot of money. So investing is about compounding. And the compounding doesn't happen in a month, in 3 months, in 6 months, in a year. It happens. It's one of those world's wonders where it happens over time. You know, you put your money in a stock, you get dividends, those dividends get reinvested, you know, you keep compounding. So for me, is that what give a guy is to say, investor, a young investor coming into the space, to say, please, with the mindset of a long-term investor, and investing is about compounding and compounding over time. So especially now with AI and everything else, you can compound thought, you know, they'll give me or Gemini and any of these AI kind of programs, they give you stocks, but that's not a sustainable way of investing. So for me, if you look at the companies that have compounded over the years and created multi-generational wealth, is those stocks where you buy and you keep them and you've got massive compound interest.
They say that compounding is the fifth wonder of the world. Everybody thinks it was Einstein who said it, or it's been attributed to him, but apparently it is not. But we'll have to leave it there. Malungelo, thank you so much for your time and for sharing your insights. And hopefully on the 1st of October, you have a good party.
Absolutely. And by the way, we'll send an invite as well to you to come and join us in our celebration.
Thank you so much. That was Malungelo Silombola. He's the founder and CEO of Mazi Asset Management.
That was the MoneyWeb Be a Better Investor podcast with Rake Van Niekerk. Thanks for listening. Catch up and listen to all the MoneyWeb podcasts on moneyweb.co.za or the app. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.